A recording of the homily for the second Sunday of Lent. One of the unmistakable and constant things about love, whether it is love for a person or of a thing or an animal like a pet, is that there is a certain desire for intimacy and getting up close and personal with the object of one's love and affection. Of course, we see this very clearly in the experience of human love, where once someone is smitten and besotted with another, that there is so much interest in the other person and the desire of wanting to know the other almost knows no bounds. This is not always for the better, as the negative examples and extremes can happen, where one can end up being so obsessed with the other person that one can also become a stalker, which is scary. But in the beginnings of any relationship, one inevitably cherishes knowing the other and also has a desire for intimacy. Now, if this is true of our experience with our fellow human being, it is just as, if not even more true, when it comes to our relationship with God and God's relationship with us. It is said of the Christian faith that what makes it so remarkably different and unique is that this is the only religion in which it is God who makes the effort and goes out of his way to search for man, who is his creation as well as his beloved. Christianity is definitely not a religion where it is man who does all the seeking to look for God and uses his own means and smarts in order to reach God. The initiative is God's. And right from the book of Genesis, after having created man and seeing him fall from grace, God has been unrelenting in looking for man. Thomistic theology insists that even though man may look for God, it is God's grace that precedes and makes this search at all possible, so the initiative is God's. This is called the primacy of grace. This search for man's heart took a very long, meandering, and circuitous route, as can be seen from how God, in today's first reading from Genesis, took that initiative to bring Abraham, a Shemite, to leave his father and his homeland for a completely new country, and to give him not just a new country to call home, but more importantly, innumerable descendants beyond his fathoming. But to attain all that God promised him, he had to do a very difficult thing. Something had to happen first. He had to leave behind his entire life, his country, his family, and his father's house. In short, he had to give up everything he found comfort and security in, and had to entrust his entire life to God and let God lead the way. And he did, which is remarkable. It is this that has earned him the accolade of being called the father of faith. He did as the Lord told him. He was fully on board, as the saying goes. Our responsorial psalm from Psalm 32 echoes this trust that Abraham showed God. We said, "May your love be upon us, O Lord, as we place all our hope in you." You can almost imagine how on those long, lonely desert treks, perhaps even in the nights spent alone in the wild, where it was not only cold but also dangerous and exposed to the elements and the wild animals, where Abraham would look up into the dark and vast night sky and probably not get any assurance that he was doing the right thing, but uttered that same phrase repeatedly, "All my hope is in you, Lord." And that can be our very own experience too in life, when things aren't all that clear and assured. And for some of us, this may be what we are feeling right now. God's desire for establishing and attaining intimacy with us, his beloved creation, was not something that was achieved overnight. There were many scenes and different acts along the way of what is called salvation history. There were the big players, what some would call the A-listers or the starring roles. Think Abraham, Moses, Jacob, Isaiah. And some would be supporting actors or actresses. Think Job, Jonah, or Haggai, or Esther, or Ruth, who helped the main starring personalities in fulfilling their roles. But every single person was just as important to God and was just as loved by God, regardless of the roles they played. Now, I'm taking a certain risk of over-summarizing it too much when I say that the entire Old Testament's purpose was to be the prelude or the opening overture, if you will, to pave the way for the incarnation, which is God's personal arrival onto the scene of salvation history's central character in the person of Jesus Christ. In Jesus Christ, God steps into the story in a very concrete way and fulfills all that the Old Testament promises and points toward. But even the life of Jesus Christ itself is not the last or closing scene in this epic love story between God and man. In fact, the story's first part has been told, but the epilogue is still ongoing, and it is still being unfolded in the life of every single man and woman who is invited through baptism to respond willingly and lovingly to God's offer of divine intimacy. This will only be fulfilled for each one of us when we have reached heaven after we have ended our lives on this earth. This ending that awaits us is not something that is unknown or something that we have absolutely no idea or notion of. God has given us a sneak peek, if you will, of what awaits us. And this is the essence of today's gospel text for the second Sunday of Lent, which is Matthew's account of what is known as the Transfiguration of Christ. In the Transfiguration event, Jesus brings three of his disciples on a mountain trek, and we are told that he did this so that they could be alone. Now that's a strong indication that he desired to share an intimate moment with them. This intimacy was in the form of a revelation of glory, where light came out of him. It's not as if a light shone on him. In John's Gospel, Jesus declares that he is the light of the world. And here in Matthew's Gospel, they have an experience of this truth. In having Moses and Elijah appearing with Jesus, God is revealing that Jesus is the fulfillment of the law, Moses, and the prophets, Elijah, and is indeed the Messiah that was promised to them. But how this promise would be fulfilled was still a mystery to them. But what they saw that day, the light and glory which Jesus was filled with, was going to be the end result, both for the Messiah as well as those who are his disciples. This is the glory that they witnessed. In a way, what they saw was a preview or a trailer, a sneak peek, a spoiler alert of what was to come for both Jesus and for all of us. Now, the audible assurance that they received that day was God declaring from the cloud that covered them that this Jesus enjoyed God's favor. This is something which could not be understood in its fullness at that time, but needed a whole lot of unpacking as the life of Jesus approached his passion and crucifixion. One can almost be certain of this, that if God had shown them how Jesus would be betrayed, scourged, covered with bruises and bleeding and left naked on the cross of Calvary, and after that say, "This is my beloved son, this is the one who enjoys my favor," that it would leave Peter, James, and John so utterly confused. As well, it may well leave them not being fully on board with this seemingly ludicrous plan of God. That is perhaps the strongest reason why Jesus had to silence them at the end, ordering them to tell no one about the vision until the Son of Man has risen from the dead. They wouldn't be able to handle the truth at that point, a line borrowed from Jack Nicholson's character, Colonel Nathan Jessup, in the movie A Few Good Men. Like the two disciples on the road to Emmaus, the three of them at that point would be foolish men, so slow to believe the full message of the prophets. This preview of the eventual glory that was to come for Jesus and those who would be his disciples definitely gave Jesus that morale boost for him to resolutely do the Father's will, despite it taking him to Calvary and beyond. It is significant that we hear this message on the second Sunday of Lent. It's timely because the end of Lent is the celebration of the glory of the resurrection of Easter. The Lenten period that we are only in the second of 5 weeks this Sunday is also a period of purification of love, which longs for the intimacy of the resurrected body that awaits all who put all their hope in God. It's also a message of encouragement to all who may find the Christian life a bit challenging, because the Christian life is, after all, a life that calls for us to love even those who do not love us back, and to walk that path of faith even though it is tough, like Abraham did in saying that yes to God. The Christian life is one that calls for a love, both of God and of one another, not only when it feels good, but especially because oftentimes great effort is needed to demonstrate and make fruitful that love that we are called to. With the situation of the coronavirus still casting a shadow over so many lives since mid-February, we can identify with Abram. Things are still not clear. Some of us are still surrounded with doubt and fear. But with faith in the fact that we know that God ultimately wants to establish a deep, intimate relationship with us, we know that there will be a time to come when we will go back to our lives and attain a certain normalcy that gives us peace and stability. God love you.